3. The letter finds Yennefer in Novigrad at the beginning of spring. It's waiting for her when she steps back into her lodgings, sitting on the polished mahogany side table in the small library, along with a pile of other correspondence. There's a brief note from Tisea, and a lengthy essay from Istrid, along with any number of requests for her presence, her assistance, her advice, from petitioners across the continent. Yennefer sits in a wing-back armchair and sifts through the letters, sorting them into smaller piles. To read now, to read later, and to kindle tonight's fire when the springtime cold settles into her bones. The sorting process is fairly straightforward. She deliberates over putting Istrid's dissertation in the kindling pile, before begrudgingly relegating it to later. Until she gets to the bottom of the stack. And there it is. A letter with a distinctive curl of paper that's been flattened out after being carried on the ankle of a raven. A letter addressed in a familiar hand to Yen. There's only one person who calls her Yen, after all. Yennefer puts the rest to one side and opens Geralt's letter. It's short, which she is somehow not surprised by. He greets her with careful formality before rapidly shifting to explain that he's riding from Kaer Morhen, that Ciri is with him, Yennefer's heart warms a little at the mention of the vicious little princess, and that she's having difficulties with aspects of her blossoming chaos. Yennefer frowns, reads more intently. Bad dreams, uncontrolled bouts of telekinesis, an inability to block out the thoughts from others' minds. Geralt goes on to say that they'll be in Ard Carrig in a few weeks' time, and asks that she meet them there. And then his handwriting wavers a little less confident, and he writes, "It would be good to see you, Yen." Yennefer drops the letter into her lap, curls her hand into a fist. She last saw Geralt in Oxenfurt, just before winter began to close in. She was there with Jaskier, sharing a steaming jug of mulled wine in his study at the Academy, loudly complaining to him about whatever the fuck it is that Vilgefortz thinks he's doing in the south of Lyria, when the door opened, and Geralt just strolled in, casual, easy, like there was nowhere else in the world he'd rather be. He froze a little when he saw her, still awkward, still strained, but then Ciri came barreling past and practically threw herself into Yennefer's arms, and, well... When Yennefer next looked up, Geralt had a hand on Jaskier's shoulder, and the smile on Jaskier's face could only really be described as doting. An expression that Yennefer, of course, made sure to relentlessly mock him for later. Yennefer smiles at the memory, just faintly, and retrieves Geralt's letter. Geralt gives a few more details of dates, lists the name of a few places they're likely to be staying in, then signs off. Yennefer rereads the short message once more, particularly the description of Ciri's difficulties, trying to piece together a picture of what she might need to do from Geralt's sparse prose, then flips the letter over and sees that there's a postscript, written in a different hand, scrawling and flamboyant, unsigned as if the writer just assumes that she'll know who it is. Jaskier, Yennefer mutters to herself, rolling her eyes, then reads. Bring a bottle of that lavender mead I liked, won't you, my naiad? The alcohol selection at Kaer Morhen is, frankly, appalling. I tried to have a word with Vesemir, but he just said something about having more important priorities than my dandyish tastes, and then proceeded to fawn all over Ciri for the rest of the evening. I feel very underappreciated. The very is, of course, dramatically underlined. I'll see you in Ard Carrig, Jaskier writes. And then, on the next line, he's ready when you are. A sharp thrill runs through Yennefer's heart. She puts the letter to one side, then quickly skims through the rest of the notes that she'd put in the now pile. There's nothing there that's either exciting or interesting, so she tosses them to one side, goes back to Geralt's letter, and reads it through once more. The dates he gives are a week or so from now, And while it's maybe not ideal for Yennefer to leave Novigrad so soon, because she does have business here that can't just be dropped at a moment's notice, she can probably deal with the most pressing issues in the next few days, then clear her schedule, and go meet them in Ardkarreg. Yennefer flips the letter over and rereads Yaskir's postscript. She lingers over my naiad, snorts a laugh, and then ponders the mead request for a second. Just remember if there's a specialist stockist of Lyrian spirits in Novigrad. There's a boutique supplier of exotic alcohols in one of the main squares, she thinks. She'll have a look tomorrow. Yaskir gifted her a bottle of violet-infused gin distilled by one of his Oxenfurt friends the last time they met, so she does owe him. And therefore, he will be relentless if she doesn't turn up in Ardkarreg with exactly what he wants. He's nothing if not predictable. Yennefer runs her thumb over that last line of text. He's ready when you are. Then folds the letter and tucks it into her pocket. It takes her 6 days to deal with the rest of her most pressing business in Novigrad. Anything that's left either isn't important or can be passed on to someone else to deal with, and she spends a productive afternoon at the desk in her library, writing letters to colleagues that she knows will be able to pick up the slack. Istrid's essay actually turns out to be surprisingly interesting, so she tucks that into the bag she's taking with her to Ardkarreg, figures that she can spend a cold early spring evening replying at her leisure, while Geralt and Yaskir make eyes at each other over Ciri's head. Or something along those lines. Yennefer's read Geralt's letter so many times now that the paper is starting to come apart at the creases. She's read Yaskir's postscript just as many times, if not more, and there's a bottle of Lyrian lavender mead sitting in her travel bag, just waiting to be delivered. It's a little after noon, on a cold, stormy day in Novigrad, when Yennefer opens up a portal to Caedwin. She's wrapped up warm, her coat lined with fox fur, boots high and snug around her calves, leather gloves creaking with every twist of her fingers. But despite all her preparations, the wind hits her like a knife the moment she steps through into the stones of Ardkarreg. She curses under her breath, tugs her coat tighter around herself, and peers up into the bitter blue sky, the cold sun, the fat, heavy clouds. Couldn't Geralt have summoned her to somewhere a little warmer? Snowflakes start to drift lazily down from the sky, catching in her hair, in the fox fur around her neck, and Yennefer decides it's probably best to go find shelter before she ends up caught in a blizzard. She remembers the names of the inns in Geralt's letter without even having to think about it. The Rose Thorn, the Traveler's Repose, and the End of the Road. Which, frankly, sounds a little ominous. Yennefer tries the End of the Road first. Is vaguely glad when the innkeeper tells her no one matching Geralt's description has been here in the last few weeks, and then moves on to the Rose Thorn. It's a rustic little place, tucked away in one of the city's more obscure back streets. And as Yennefer trudges her way through the gusting snow toward the inn's merrily painted front door, she hears the strains of a familiar tenor voice drifting through the cold northern air. Yennefer listens to the song for a moment. It's something new, not one she's heard before, the melody rising sweet and resonant over Ardkarreg's snowy rooftops. It calms the uneven patter of her heart. She pushes through the inn's front door, painted in a swirling, stylized pattern of roses with unsurprisingly thorny stems. It's warm inside, a fire burning hot and smoky in a deep hearth, candles flickering on every table in the small common area. And Yennefer closes the door behind her before that delicious warmth can dissipate into the wintry air. She scans the dim interior as she pulls off her gloves, breathing in the smell of ale and stew, listening to the sound of low conversation. And, well, it's not like a witcher, a princess, and a brightly colored bard are exactly hard to find. Yaskir is perched on a chair next to the fireplace, fingers picking almost lazily at the strings of his lute. His voice is lilting and melodious, weaving through the smoky air, singing a song of comfort and safety, and long, slow evenings gathered around a fire in the depths of winter. And he glances up as Yennefer crosses the common area, catches her gaze, and flashes her smile, but doesn't stop singing. A warmth that's different from the heat of the fire seeps through Yennefer's heart at that, rich and comforting. And she holds on to it, clings to it tighter than she'd like to admit, as she turns away and goes to the ever-predictable shadowy table in a quiet corner. She does notice, however, that the table has a perfect view of where Yaskir sits and croons beside the fire. Geralt straightens at her approach, ease and relaxation disappearing from his stance. "Yen," he says, something that might almost be hope in his expression. "It's good to see you." Ciri, sitting with her back to the room, spins in her seat. "Yennefer!" she practically squeals, then hurls herself to her feet and throws her arms around Yennefer's waist. All the wind is driven out of Yennefer's lungs at the impact, and for a second all she can think is that Ciri's grip is strong, surprisingly so, stronger than it was before the winter. But then that warmth in her heart sparks stronger, hotter, burns up into a fire of love and affection that consumes her every waking thought, except for the girl in her arms. Yennefer wraps her arms around Ciri, pulls her into a hug, presses her cheek into her ash-blonde hair. "Ciri," she says, quiet enough that even Geralt would struggle to hear, then draws back, kisses her forehead lightly, and pauses. "What?" she says, her voice as icy as the blizzard building outside. "Have they done to your hair?" The last time Yennefer saw her, Ciri's hair was down to her waist, pale and soft and falling in gentle, elegant waves. Now, it's shorn short around her ears, irregular and sticking up at the back of her head, longer on the left, with one errant strand at the back reaching down below her collar. It's possibly the worst haircut Yennefer has ever seen. It's frankly offensive. Ciri grins up at her. "Lambert cut it," she says brightly. "He said it would get in my eyes if I had it so long, and that it was fine for..." She cuts herself off, glances at the half-full common room, then takes Yennefer by the hand and guides her to the table. "He said it was fine for a princess to have hair like that," she says, quieter, and Yennefer slides into an empty seat. "But then if I'm to be a witcher, it's risk. It's stupid to try and fight monsters with hair that long." Yennefer turns her gaze to Geralt, who quails a little. "And you just let him cut it all off?" she asks, incredulous. "Lambert!" Geralt just shrugs. "I quite like it," Ciri says, a little prim. "It feels a lot lighter." "There's nothing wrong with having it short, Ciri," Yennefer says, then reaches out, runs her fingers over the ragged cut, tugs lightly at that longer strand at the nape of Ciri's neck. "But it can still have a little more style than whatever this is supposed to be." "I did try to tell them you wouldn't be happy," Yaskir says, taking the seat next to Geralt, perched across the table from Yennefer. There's a softness in Geralt's eyes that Yennefer doesn't miss, and he presses a light touch to Yaskir's back, almost absently, like he doesn't realize he's doing it. "Warned Lambert to maybe get out of town if he hears you're around for the next few years," Yaskir continues. "I know how seriously you take hair and beauty." He flashes her a bright, affectionate smile. "Hello, Yennefer." Yennefer ignores his greeting. "You let them do this?" Yaskir grimaces. "I wasn't consulted," he says, mock glaring at Ciri, who just giggles. "And I have it on Eskel's good authority that I was intentionally distracted while this butchery was going on, because they knew I wouldn't stand for it." Yennefer turns her sharpest gaze on Ciri. Is that right? Ciri just beams back, gleefully cheerful. It was Lambert's idea, she says helpfully. Lambert isn't the one who distracted me with sweet nothings about my singing while his Witcher brothers destroyed your hair, Yaskir says, pointedly not looking at Geralt. Geralt? Yennefer asks, icy cold. Geralt looks possibly more uncomfortable than Yennefer's ever seen him before. Lambert threatened him, Ciri explains. Said that he'd tell Yaskir what happened with the Brooks and Goulet if he didn't help us. And then Lambert told me anyway, Yaskir complains, smacking Geralt lightly in the chest. So that went really well for you, didn't it? Geralt hums in response, his expression caught somewhere between irritated and hopelessly fond. And all of a sudden, Yennefer is overcome by a sudden flood of feeling, affection and warmth, happiness and yearning. Yaskir says something else that she doesn't hear. Ciri laughs in response and kicks out at him under the table. And Yennefer watches Geralt watch them, watches the softness in his eyes, the protectiveness, the way his touch lingers on Yaskir's back, the intensity of his focus when he speaks to Ciri. She wants that, she abruptly realizes. She misses that. Yaskir is studying her, a small smile playing across his lips. Geralt, he says, not dropping Yennefer's gaze. Weren't you talking about taking Roach to that blacksmith we passed on the way in yesterday, getting that loose shoe looked at? You know, Ciri, the smithy with those daggers hung up outside, the ones with the tourmalines in the hilt? Ciri's eyes go wide. You did say I could try them out, Geralt, she says insistently. See what the weight is like. You said they're the right size for me. You don't need daggers with tourmalines in the hilt, Geralt rumbles. But Yennefer doesn't need to see his expression to know that he'll do whatever Ciri wants him to in the end. But Roach does need her shoes looking at, he allows after a moment, and unfolds from the table. Come on, Ciri, he says, and then pauses, almost hovers. Are you staying, Yen? Yennefer looks up at him, and... Oh, fuck! She'd forgotten what it feels like to have that golden gaze on her. I'm staying, she says, nodding shortly, and turns back to Yaskir before she can succumb to the shiver that's threatening to rack her spine. Yaskir glances up at Geralt, a wry smile twisting his lips. Go, he says, quietly commanding. We'll be here when you're done trying to resist buying Ciri whatever she wants you to buy her. Yennefer half expects Geralt to argue, but instead he just hums, quietly amused, and goes, taking Ciri with him. His hand rests on her shoulder as they duck out of the inn's painted door. The very picture of father and his skinny-limbed child. Yennefer looks away, a tightness in her throat that she chooses not to look at. Instead, she quirks an eyebrow at Yaskir, says, "You seem to have him well-trained." Yaskir's expression turns a little rueful. "Let's just say he's a lot more attentive this time around," he says. Then laughs at his own words, waggles his eyebrows. In all kinds of ways. And it sounds like you've had all winter to break him in, Yennefer observes. In between mucking out stables, trying not to fall for any of Lambert's pranks, and making a valiant effort to persuade Vesemir to update Kaemorin's spirits collection? Yaskir sighs, leaning forward on the table between them, burying his head in his hands. I swear, Yennefer, it's beautiful up in the mountains, it really is, and I get that it's the safest place for Ciri to be, I really do. Oh, but gods, I miss wintering in polite society. He looks up at her, his eyes shining with memory. Roast partridge, hot chocolate, mulled wine with cinnamon and cloves and star anise, winter balls, red velvet doublets trimmed with mink, those first stole things that they wear in Sidaris. He laughs, sits back in his chair, and despite his complaining, his shoulders are loose, relaxed. He looks happy. You know, I got snowed in at the Countess de Stael's estate one winter. Oh, maybe 10 years ago now. We spent days in her rooms, not even getting dressed to eat, making love on every surface we could. She had this bearskin rug in front of the fire. It was massive and so soft. And I don't know if you've ever fucked on a bearskin rug in front of a roaring fire, Yennefer, but I can seriously recommend it. Just for a second, Yennefer lets herself picture it. Yaskir, naked as the day he was born, skin flushed from the fire, head thrown back, mouth open, eyes closed. Those long, calloused fingers running through the soft fur of the bearskin rug, gripping tight as his pleasure builds. Her mouth goes a little dry, and she puts that thought to one side. "I'll bear that in mind," she says, distracted. Yaskir stares at her. "Was that a pun?" Yennefer winces. "Never intentionally," she answers as haughtily as she can. And then, because she can see the teasing look blossoming in his expression, "I have something for you." Yaskir's eyes light up. He is so easy to distract. "My lavender mead?" "Your lavender mead," Yennefer confirms, retrieving the bottle from her travel bag. It's slender, surprisingly elegant, with delicate lavender stems molded into the glass around the neck. And she's not about to tell Yaskir this, but she did pay slightly more for that raised lavender decoration to be lightly gilded. It's a gift, after all. Yennefer never stints on gifts. Yaskir snatches it out of her hands, pulls the stopper out, and breathes in the honey-sweet floral fragrance of the mead. "I've not had this in months," he says, ecstatic. "Not since last summer, I think. That afternoon on the barge with that boatman who wouldn't stop staring down your dress." Yennefer snorts a laugh. "His optimism was almost inspiring," she says dryly. Yaskir hums and stoppers the bottle. "It does take significantly more work than that to bed the mighty Yennefer of Vengerberg," he says, then practically smirks. "Speaking of..." Yennefer knew it was coming, but that doesn't stop the heat rising in her cheeks. She arches an eyebrow as regally as she can, says, "What exactly are you referring to?" "You can't fool me, Yennefer," Yaskir says, surprisingly soft. "I saw the way you were looking at him just then. I know what those doe eyes mean, mainly because I'm pretty sure that's how I look most of the time when I'm around him." Yennefer bristles. "I don't have doe eyes." "You really do," Yaskir answers, then reaches across the table, covers her hand with his. "And I don't mean anything bad by it, I really don't. There's nothing wrong with being vulnerable." Yennefer opens her mouth, ready to contradict that ridiculous statement, but Yaskir just keeps talking. "There isn't. In fact, being vulnerable is a good thing. Do you really think that I would have got to where I am with Geralt right now if I hadn't put myself out there? If I hadn't practically fucking flayed myself open? Because he sure as fuck wasn't going to take that risk, was he?" "Yaskir," Yennefer says. She doesn't know what she wants to say. Yaskir's watching her, that infuriating softness still blazing in his eyes. "Do you want him, Yennefer?" he asks. Yennefer grits her teeth. "You know the answer." Yaskir shakes his head. "Gonna need to hear you say it." "Yaskir... Yennefer," Yaskir answers shortly, and he isn't joking now, isn't soft, isn't playful. If I'm wrong, if I'm crossing a line, then tell me and I'll stop. I swear I'll stop. I don't want to push you to do something you don't want to do. Fucking hell, Yennefer, I know how hard it is to forgive that asshole. And if you're not ready for that, then that's fine. He pauses, studies her for a second, and his fingers squeeze gently around hers. But if you are, he says, softer, then I need you to tell me. Why? Yennefer says, sharper than she really intends to. To satisfy your insatiable need to meddle? Yaskir blinks, releases her hand. No, he says, his voice suddenly guarded. No, it's because I care about you, Yennefer. And I care about Geralt, too. It's because I'm the only one who's seeing this from both sides at the moment. He pauses, looks down at his hands, still resting close to hers on the tabletop. Even when she snaps at him, Yennefer realizes with a flood of regret. Even when she tries to push him away exactly how Geralt did on that mountaintop all those years ago, he doesn't pull away. Right now, you're both miserable, Yaskir says eventually, cocking an eyebrow at her in an attempt at levity. Which is shit for me, I'd like to point out. There's only so long I can put up with the two of you moping. His expression softens. I'd just like to try to help you find some peace with each other. Yennefer's heart twists, and she takes his hand, runs her fingertips across the raised, hard skin of his calluses. I thought this wasn't about you, she asks, light and joking, an apology, an olive branch. That guardedness vanishes like it was never there in the first place. And Yaskir entwines their fingers, squeezes his acceptance. Everything's about me, you know that, he demurs, then flashes her a lopsided smile. I want you to be happy, Yennefer, he says. Geralt, too. And I'm pretty sure that this time around, you two can figure it out. He smirks. With my help, of course. Yennefer eyes him suspiciously. Isn't being in the middle of this a little strange for you? Oh, do you mean how I'm currently trying to persuade you to confess your undying love for my current lover, the man we spent all those years bickering over? Yaskir asks, grinning, then shrugs. Not particularly. There's a lot of love in the world, Yennefer. More than enough to go around. He laughs. Plus, as much as I do love that witcher stamina of his, I am only human. It'd be nice to have someone else to take up some of the slack when I've been fucked silly and really need a nap, but someone wants to keep going until morning. He grins. I'll just send him next door to you. Yennefer smiles at that. And then, for a long moment, just watches the gentle, rhythmic sweep of Yaskir's thumb across the back of her hand. I want him, she says eventually, barely louder than a whisper, the hardest thing she's had to say in months. I want to try, at least. The smile that floods Yaskir's expression is warmer than the midsummer sun. I'm going to talk to the innkeeper, he says, which, in Yennefer's opinion, is a slight non sequitur. We've only got one room at the moment, Yaskir continues by way of explanation. One bed that I've been sharing with Geralt and a pallet in the corner for Ciri. I'm pretty sure I saw the brothers who were in the room next door on their way out of town this morning, so I figure that, given we're in the middle of the off-season right now, there's probably not many tourists who would have checked in. We should be able to get the room. His smile turns a little wicked. Me and Ciri will be within shouting distance if anyone tries a light spot of kidnapping in the middle of the night, which Geralt will appreciate. But the two of you will be able to enjoy a little privacy, which I imagine you'll both appreciate. Yennefer rolls her eyes. I'm not you, Bard, she says, but lightly, teasingly. I'm not just going to leap into bed with him the moment he stumbled out some three-word apology that I'd laugh at if it came from anyone else.
Yaskir's gaze is knowing.
Yeah, you will,
he says, and waggles his eyebrows.
Because trust me, Yennefer, the makeup sex is fantastic.
Yennefer laughs, then squeezes his hand once more and lets go. She abruptly feels oddly bereft, and she studies Yaskir for a moment, the brightness of his eyes, the slightly too long tussle of his hair, the tilt of his head, and the not-so-faint bruise that she can just see peeking above the collar of his thick winter jacket.
Thank you, she says, before she can stop herself. I'm fairly sure that I wouldn't be here without you.
Yaskir's smile twists a little.
Think of it as me paying you back.
For rescuing you from Nilfgaard? Yennefer asks. Yaskir scoffs.
No,
he says, mock offended.
I'd hope that you'd come and rescue me from that kind of nonsense without any promise or repayment. No, this is for the
mead. Yennefer cocks an eyebrow.
I thought that was in exchange for the violet gin you gave me before winter.
Yaskir frowns at her.
But that was me paying you back for the sparkling Beauclair white you bought in Novigrad that time.
I only paid for that, Yennefer points out, because of all the ale we drank in your tab in Skellig.
Yaskir pulls a face. I actually skipped out on that tab, he says, to his credit, looking a little guilty.
Yennefer glares at him, and he holds up his hands.
Sorry, I spent all my money on that fancy inn room, which, I might add, you took advantage of as well. Don't think I didn't notice you stealing the complimentary slippers.
Yennefer sniffs.
I have no need to steal complimentary slippers from Skellig, Yaskir, she drawls, ignoring the fact that, actually, she's pretty sure those slippers are currently at the bottom of her traveling bag. She'll have to be careful not to wear them while Yaskir's around. Can't have him knowing he's right.
I know you don't, Yaskir says. Doesn't mean you didn't, Yennefer.
He points an accusing finger at her. And don't think I've forgiven you for stealing my boots in Vizima, either. I had to walk through the city barefoot and hungover until I found a decent fucking shoemaker.
Yennefer shrugs.
You can prove nothing, Bard.
Yaskir splutters, appalled.
It's another half an hour or so before Geralt and Ciri return from their adventure to the blacksmith, and Yennefer whiles away the time with her favorite pastime, teasing Yaskir until he's red in the face and can't stop laughing. The look that Geralt shoots them when he ducks back into the common area is more than a little bemused, but then Ciri is coming dancing back to their table, a dagger with a glittering green hilt in her hand. And Yennefer has more important things to think about than Geralt or Rivia.
Yaskir leaves them to go barter with the innkeeper while Ciri tells tales of the winter just gone. It was a lot of eating, training, and taking the piss out of Geralt, from what Yennefer can tell.
And Yennefer listens with a soft smile curling her lips. She's not sure that she regrets not being there, exactly, because she knows she wouldn't be able to spend a whole winter cooped up in the mountains with a bunch of witchers without killing someone.
But at the same time, Ciri boasts about Cohen taking her on midnight raids in the pantry, and Vesemir praising her fencing footwork, and, well, a sour taste slicks itself across the back of Yennefer's tongue.
Ciri pauses for a second and looks down at her hands.
But she starts, a little more hesitant.
They couldn't help me with everything.
She looks up, her expression tight.
I have these dreams sometimes, she says, halting, awkward. And when I wake up, the bed is moved across the floor, and all the windows are flung open. Even now, out of Kaer Morhen, Yaskir had to shake me awake last night because the walls were trembling.
There are tears in Ciri's eyes, and Yennefer feels her heart clench. She stands,
extends her hand to Ciri. Come, she says, softer, gentler. We'll talk about this, but not here. Show me to your room. Ciri takes her hand without hesitation and leads her upstairs. Yennefer thinks she knows what the problem is, even without the tricks and tests she gets Ciri to perform for her. And as she sits in the modestly furnished room, the small table a mess of Yaskir and Ciri's belongings, a pile of Geralt's armor in one corner, her initial suspicions are confirmed. Ciri can conjure a ball of flame in her palm, can lift a wooden chair without touching it, can pluck thoughts out of the surface of Yennefer's mind with very little effort. But every time she does, Yennefer can feel how little true control she has, can feel stray threads of chaos fizzing in the air and crackling in her fingertips. It builds with everything Ciri does, making the room practically thrum with magic, vibrant and overflowing. And eventually, Yennefer has to hold up her hand, stopping her. It's your control, she says, firm but not unkind. Your control is extremely poor, Ciri. I thought we spoke about this before you went to the Witcher's for the winter. You have to practice. Ciri's jaw sets. I have been practicing, she says, bristling a little. But the dreams are worse than they were before the winter. They're stronger. Her hands are tight at her sides, fingers dug into her thighs. I know you taught me ways to keep my power under control, but they're not enough. And I don't want to hurt anyone. Not again. Her hands are shaking. I really don't. All right, Ciri, Yennefer says, as soothing as she can. Take a breath. There are shielding techniques I can show you, mental blocks that will help. They take time and energy to be maintained, and they are not simple to learn. But they will help. She pauses, studies Ciri for a moment. Can you promise me that you will give me your full attention on this matter? That you won't distract yourself with playing at being a witcher when I need your focus? Ciri frowns. I'm not playing. You have immense power, Ciri. Yennefer interrupts. No matter how well you wield a sword, or how many monsters you slaughter, you will always have that power, and you will always need to control it. You can put down a sword if you so choose. You can stop slaying monsters. You cannot put aside your connection to chaos. And if you don't learn to control it, to properly control it, then you will bring harm to those around you. For a second, she thinks about Yaskir, shaking Ciri awake from her nightmares, human and breakable in the face of such power. I do not mean to frighten you, Yennefer says, quieter, but I need you to take this seriously. I do, Ciri answers, eyes bright. Please teach me. I'll focus. I swear I will. Her chin lifts, insistent. I'm here, aren't I? Tell me what to do. Yennefer pauses, her jaw tight. You do realize, Cirilla, she says, that what I have to teach you cannot be mastered in a day. Ciri opens her mouth, ready to jump in to protest, and Yennefer holds up a hand. I don't just mean that you need to practice exercises and control. I mean that for the rest of your life, you will be learning. Always learning, every day, every moment. If you want to reach your potential, and if you want to ensure that the people around you are safe, you will continue to learn, to grow. You cannot just have a couple of lessons and know everything. This is your life now. Ciri's expression flickers through a myriad of emotions, changing so fast Yennefer can barely parse them. After a moment, her bright young face settles into a mask of determination. I know, she says, solid and serious. I know, Yennefer. Yennefer nods. Good, she says. then indicates the space next to her on the bed. Sit. We'll begin immediately. They spend the rest of the afternoon in that room, snow streaming past the windows and fire crackling merrily in the small grate. It's not exactly the ideal location for a lesson in constructing barriers against chaos, but Yennefer manages to catch the few minor bursts of raw power that Ciri can't hold back herself, disperses them harmlessly before they can do anything inconvenient, like tear the roof off the inn. She imagines they'd probably get in trouble for that. By the time that darkness has fallen, Ciri is exhausted and Yennefer is starving, but they've made good progress. "You did well today," Yennefer says, pride brimming up in her tired heart. "Very well." Ciri's answering smile is a little sluggish, but warm nonetheless. "Can we get something to eat now?" she asks, which demonstrates such a keen grasp of the real priorities in life that Yennefer would never dream of saying no. Geralt and Jaskier are sitting at the same table in the common area downstairs, looking comfortable enough that Yennefer's pretty sure they haven't moved all afternoon. Jaskier greets them brightly when they come down the stairs, then goes to speak to the innkeeper, and within 5 minutes they're brought bowls of hot stew, fresh bread, butter, and a plate of small honey cakes that Ciri immediately monopolizes. The food is basic, but surprisingly good. Yennefer's had worse honey cakes at royal banquets in the past. And it satisfies that gnawing hunger in her belly, leaves her satiated and warm, comfortable and surprisingly content. Yaskir's shoulder pressed up against hers, her feet tangled with Ciri's under the table. They spend the evening like that, in camaraderie and comfort, with no ulterior motive, no complexities, nothing except the warmth of the fire and the soft music of their laughter. It's late when Jaskier gives Geralt a pointed look, then clears his throat, stands with a flourish. "Ciri," he says, bright and clear and very unsettled about what exactly he is up to. "Want to come up to our new room and take up where we left off last night? The lute is a cruel mistress, and she demands constant practice in the pursuit of perfection." Ciri's answering grin is far too knowing for Yennefer's liking. "Of course," she says, bounding out of her seat. "I have lots of questions about strings and singing, things like that." She grabs Jaskier by the sleeve, drags him away across the common area, and when they get to the bottom of the stairs, she looks back, mischief sparkling in her eyes, before Jaskier ushers her upstairs. Yennefer meets Geralt's gaze, bold and brash. "They're not subtle, are they?" she says, her heart beating harder in her chest. Geralt hums. "Subtlety isn't Jaskier's specialty." Yennefer laughs softly. "Dijkstra and his cronies must have been smoking something rather special when they decided to recruit him for the bloody Redanian Secret Service." Geralt shrugs, a lopsided, one-shouldered affair, and studies her, surprisingly intense.
"He can be devious when he wants to be,"
he says, low and rumbling. And, oh, Yennefer abruptly realizes that this is the first time they've been alone together since that night in her tent on the mountaintop. Geralt is still and steady, watching her with his golden yellow eyes.
"Yen, can we talk?"
"Not here," Yennefer answers, glancing at the pair of drunken traitors at the neighboring table. "Upstairs?" Geralt nods and follows. The scattered belongings have been hurriedly cleared off the table, and the small pile of bags in the corner has significantly reduced in size since Yennefer was last in here. There's snow piled high in the windows now, and the fire has guttered to embers, lighting the room with a soft glow. Yennefer watches as Geralt stokes the fire, then lights a handful of candles, some on the table, some on the windowsill. The light is warm, encompassing. She's pretty sure that Yaskir would describe it as romantic. Geralt stops, his shoulders tight. Yen, he says, quiet, pausing. Yennefer raises an eyebrow. Geralt, she answers, and leaves it there. Geralt looks oddly frustrated, and he makes a noise that's halfway between a sigh and a grunt. Yennefer's pretty sure that he's trying to figure out how exactly to start this conversation, but is coming up short. And she could take pity on him, she supposes, could give him an opening. But frankly, she's quite enjoying watching him struggle. His face twists through half a dozen expressions, and then he sighs again, looks down at his hands. Yen, he starts, then stops again, and his lips draw back in a snarl. Geralt, Yennefer says in answer, a little wry, and then all of a sudden it hits her just how ludicrous this whole scenario is, and she laughs, sharp and high. Geralt looks up at her, startled, and that just makes it worse because he's a witcher. He's a fucking monster hunter. And here he is in a candlelit room in Ardkerrig, looking awkward and uncomfortable and not knowing what to say because he can't quite figure out how to talk about his feelings. Yennefer sits down heavily on the edge of the bed, puts her head in her hands, and keeps laughing. Geralt stares at her for a moment longer, clearly not quite knowing how to deal with this new turn of events. But then he relaxes, smiles a bitterly self-deprecating smile, and sits down next to her. I suppose I deserve that, he says, gruff but affectionate at the same time. Yennefer brushes away an errant tear, careful not to smudge the coal around her eyes. Yes, you do, she says, and oh so carefully nudges her shoulder against his. Go on, Geralt. I'm listening. Geralt smiles at her, his golden eyes catching in the firelight. They talk long into the night, until the windowsill is almost entirely covered in snow, and the candles on the table have burned down to artful puddles of wax. It's not easy, not by a long shot, because there's so much pain between them now. Pain and history and bad decisions. And there's more than one moment where Yennefer clenches her teeth and has to force herself not to just get up and leave. But she remembers what Yaskir told her, remembers what he said. Being vulnerable is a good thing. Being vulnerable is how they move forward. So she stays. And she talks. And she suppresses the recurrent urge to just punch the idiot witcher in his idiot gin-wishing mouth. But she doesn't. And they talk. About his wish, about his lies, about his betrayal. And then about her hurt, her detachment, her anger. He apologizes in awkward, pausing, grimacing words. And they're not pretty. They're not dripping with honey, but she can hear the honesty in his voice, raw and naked. Yennefer doesn't know if she forgives him. She really doesn't. And really, she's not sure if she'll ever forgive him, because by making that wish, he took her choice from her. She loves him. She always will love him. But she'll never know if that love came from her, or if it came from a genie in a fucking bottle. She tells him that, too. Sees his expression still. Sees his eyes shudder. Sees the self-hatred build in his heart. But she's had time to come to terms with it. That's what she needed, she realizes. She needed time. Yennefer reaches for Geralt, rests her fingers on his wrist. It's done, she says. It's done, Geralt. And I wouldn't be here if I didn't want to move forward. She hesitates, her mouth dry. Vulnerability. Flaying her open for everyone to see. For him to see. I want to move forward with you, she says. If that's what you want.
It is, Geralt answers immediately, almost before the words have left her lips. Fuck, Yen, of course it is.
Yennefer's heart patters quick and hard in her chest.
Good, she says, trying not to think about how her voice trembles. That's good.
Geralt's expression is warm, his eyes soft. He turns his hand over, catches her fingers, holds them tight. And all he's doing is holding her fucking hand. But nonetheless, it sends a familiar thrill down her spine. She's missed his touch.
Yen, Geralt says, holding her gaze. I want you to know...
He starts, then pauses, his nostrils flaring.
I want you to know that you're special to me, he says after a moment. My life changed for the better when I met you. I know I've made mistakes, and I know I'll probably make more in the future. But you...
He pauses, offers her the warmest, happiest smile she thinks she's ever seen.
You are so beautiful, he says,
almost hesitant, more than a little awkward. And Yennefer pushes back the familiar pang of bitterness that always follows such sweeping superficiality. She knows what he's trying to say with his stuttering, uncomfortable openness. She knows he means well.
The most beautiful woman I've ever seen, Geralt says. Or will ever see. When I'm with you, I know that all is right with the world, and I know there will never be another who makes me feel the way you make me feel.
The words are fast. So fast it's almost overwhelming. Like he's planned out exactly what to say. Like if he doesn't say it exactly how he's supposed to, he won't say anything at all.
I love you, he says. Open and aching. More than I ever thought I could.
His voice is gruff and oh so very heartfelt. And it settles deep in Yennefer's heart, gripping her so tight it's almost painful. She doesn't bother to stop the smile that spreads across her lips. Doesn't try to hold back the joy that she feels spilling through her soul. But then she pauses. Thinks for a moment. The hesitancy in his voice, the awkwardness, and then the unexpected eloquence of the words, an eloquence bordering on poetry.
Yennefer blinks. Geralt, she says.
She trails off for a moment, licks her lips. Did Yaskir tell you what to say to me? Geralt opens his mouth, then closes it again. And Yennefer's pretty sure that if witchers could blush, he'd be red as a tomato right now.
He's better with words than I am,
he finally manages, clearly embarrassed.
He gave me some advice. Said he wanted to make sure that I didn't fuck this up again.
His lips press into a thin line.
Are you angry?
Yennefer laughs, shakes her head.
I'm not angry, she says, touching his cheek with her free hand, her fingertips catching on the roughness of a stubble.
It's sweet. Geralt raises an eyebrow.
Sweet?
He asks, disbelieving.
Believe me,
Yennefer says, lips twisting.
I'm as surprised as you are that I'm not using that word as an insult.
She pauses for a second, mapping the line of his jaw with her fingers.
Do you mean what you said with your bard's voice?
She asks, smiling.
Every word, Geralt answers softly. Just for a moment, Yennefer lets herself imagine it. Geralt and Jaskier, sitting together in the common area downstairs, thighs pressed together under the table, the smell of wax and wood smoke heavy in the air. Jaskier crafting words of love and longing, and gifting them to Geralt to give to her. Jaskier murmuring, "More than I ever thought I could." His fingers trembling on Yennefer's cheek, his mead sweet breath warm against her lips. Geralt is watching her, still and smiling. And Yennefer abruptly realizes that that image isn't her imagination at all. No, it's his memory, plucked without thinking from the surface of his mind, offered up for her like a prayer. The sweetness of Jaskier's breath, the warmth of his fingertips, the love in his eyes and his words, overflowing like lavender-scented bathwater spilling from a bright copper bathtub. Yennefer leans forward and kisses Geralt, hard and soft all at once, runs her hands through his silver-white hair and feels him groan against her lips. He pulls her into his lap, her knees on either side of his hips, his hands rough and solid and so astonishingly tender. And the thrill that shudders through her as he pushes her dress up around her waist, hands hot against her bare thighs, is enough to set her heart on fire. "Yen," Geralt whispers against her lips. Yennefer hears every word he wishes he knew how to say, and knows them all to be true. She presses him back down into the bed and kisses him again. Later, when they're wrapped up together in a pile of sated limbs and satisfied smiles, breathing hard and sticky with sweat, Yennefer buries her face in the crook of Geralt's neck and laughs softly to herself. Geralt shifts under her, his fingers coating through her hair. "That's not the response I usually get," he rumbles, amused. Yennefer runs her fingers across his scarred chest, refamiliarizing herself with the responses of his body, the quiet hitch in his breath, the so slow beat of his heart. "It's just funny," she says. "Jaskier was right." Geralt pauses, craning his neck to look down at her.
"About what?"
"The makeup sex," Yennefer answers, a smile twitching her lips. "It was fantastic." Geralt sighs.
"I think I liked it better when you two couldn't stand the sight of each other."
Yennefer presses a lazy kiss to the arc of his neck.
"Those days are long gone," she says,
settling against his side.
"We have better things to do now than fight over you."
Geralt hums.
Shame.
Yennefer smiles, just a little, and closes her eyes. She sleeps better than she's slept in a long time. Geralt's arm wrapped around her shoulders, his chest warm and firm under her palm, the sound of his regular, even breathing, calming her more than she dares admit. Her dreams are blurred, abstract things, but they're not marred by blood and death like they usually are. And when she wakes, the muted morning light spilling in through the snow-covered window, she feels rested. It's a good feeling. Geralt's still asleep, his expression relaxed and open as it never is when he's awake, and she studies him for a moment, half remembering the last time they woke up in bed together, in a tent, on the side of a dragon-infested mountain. Things were different then, but the warmth that spreads through her heart is the same. Yennefer buries her face in the pillows to hide her smile, and when she breathes in, she can smell them, twined together, her perfume mixed up with Geralt's distinctive aroma of sweat and horse and something metallic, a little like blood. It's less obnoxious than Yennefer remembers, somehow sweeter. And she breathes in again, a little more alert. There, underneath the horse and gooseberries, a whisper of lavender, of linseed oil,
of expensive wine and long evenings spent in candlelit bars, of dipping their feet in the cold waters of Lake Vizima and laughing when they realized it was far too cold to go for a swim, even in midsummer. Yeah, scare, Yennefer murmurs, then smiles wryly. Of course the bed smells like him. He's been sharing it with Geralt since they arrived in Ardkaig. Really, she should probably be more offended by that than she is. She's no one's second choice, after all. But it's not just anyone, is it? It's Yaskir. It's because of him that she's here in the first place. It's because of him that she came back. Yennefer spreads her palm across the pillow, smiling a little wider. Geralt wakes a little while later, his eyes heavy molten gold in the cold winter light. He reaches for her, his lazy touch sparking fire up and down her skin. And, well, it takes them another hour or so to get out of bed after that. When they finally make it down to the common area, freshly bathed and, in Yennefer's case, perfectly put together, it's a little after midday. Yaskir and Ciri are already downstairs, of course, bent over a battered chessboard, and they're so engrossed that neither of them looks up until Yennefer sits down next to Ciri, leans closer, and whispers in her ear. Your night, Ciri, you see? Ciri's expression lights up. She moves her knight decisively, clacking it down on the chipped old board. Check, she says, bright and victorious. Yaskir narrows his eyes at Yennefer, then shifts up on the bench to give Geralt room to sit beside him. That's very unfair, he says. We never said that we were allowed advisors. You're just upset that you don't get Yennefer, Ciri says, beaming. Geralt is rubbish at chess. Yaskir sighs dramatically as Geralt settles next to him, his arms stretching out along the bench behind them, his hand automatically finding purchase against Yaskir's back. As always, I'm doing the work for both of us, he says to Geralt, who just looks amused. Right, okay. My queen takes your knight, princess. Check. He shoots Yennefer a challenging look. What do you say to that, sorceress? She doesn't need to say anything, Ciri says, smug, and moves her rook along two squares. Check, mate. Yaskir stares at the board, forehead furrowed, then says, flat and annoyed, fuck. Yennefer raises an eyebrow, trying not to smirk. She doesn't need my help to thoroughly trounce you, Yaskir, she says, and Geralt snorts a laugh. Now, aren't you going to fetch us some breakfast? More like lunch by now, Yaskir points out, then lightly slaps Geralt's stomach. Stop grabbing at me, you brute. Go get the lady something to eat. Philip is doing some fabulous mutton pies today. I can really recommend them. Yeah, they're really good. Ciri adds, clearing away the chessboard. Can I have another one? Yaskir beams and turns to Geralt. 4 mutton pies, please, he orders. It'll take a mug of the mulled cider, too. Isn't it a little early to start drinking? Yennefer asks, eyebrow raised, as Geralt ambles off to fetch their pies. Mulled cider is barely alcohol. Yaskir scoffs. He hands Ciri the last few pieces, watches as she slots them back in the chessboard's box. Then the two of them share a meaningful glance. Yennefer is really starting to dislike those glances, but she doesn't have time to protest before Yaskir is looking up at her, his forehead a little furrowed. So, he says, leaning forward, elbows propped on the table. We're not going to be in Ardkaig much longer, I'm afraid. I've got some bookings down south that I have to get to, and Geralt and Ciri need to chase contracts for a while, make some money. He cocks his head, and his smile turns a little sly. Give Given how well your conversation last night went, we were wondering if you were planning to come with us for a while. Yennefer feels her cheeks flush, unbidden. And how do you know how well our conversation went?
We could hear how well it went through the wall, Ciri points out, grinning.
There are twin spots of color high on Yaskir's cheeks.
Really not appropriate behavior around our young witcher, he says, clearly trying to hold back a smile.
I had to cover her ears.
Ciri rolls her eyes, but doesn't deny it.
Getting back to the question at hand, Yaskir says.
What will it be, Yennefer? Want to spend some quality time with your daughter, your lover, and your... bard?
Yennefer hears the pause, but doesn't quite know what to make of it.
So she decides to do what's always best to do with confusing thoughts and feelings, and ignores it.
I don't have any pressing business to attend to elsewhere, she says, keeping her voice level, keeping the mounting happiness pushed down deep, hidden away.
So, I suppose I could stay for a little while. Ciri makes a happy, excited noise and wraps her arms around Yennefer's waist.
Oh, brilliant, Yaskir says, beaming, as Geralt returns with a tray full of pies and cider.
You can help me convince Ciri to let me sort out her awful hair.
My hair is fine, Ciri protests. Yennefer shakes her head firmly.
I would not be seen dead with someone sporting that haircut, she says, undercutting the severity of her words with a gentle squeeze of Ciri's shoulders. If I'm to accompany you, I insist that you allow us to sort it out.
I wouldn't argue with her, Ciri, Geralt says, passing out the pies,
his shoulder pressed up against Yaskir's, his booted foot nudging Yennefer's ankle under the table.
She always gets what she wants.
I'll say, Yaskir mutters into his cider, and the look in his eyes leaves Yennefer in no doubt as to exactly what he is referring to.
She kicks him onto the table, and he makes a scoffing, offended noise that, for some reason, warms Yennefer's heart.
They only stay in Ardkerrig for another day or so, long enough for Yennefer to find a white stallion that isn't too exorbitantly priced, and for Geralt to restock whatever foul-smelling concoctions he stores in his bulging saddlebags. There's also enough time before they set out on the road for Yaskir to sit Ciri down with a mirror and a pair of scissors. And while he's not the best barber Yennefer's ever met, he does a passable job. Yennefer keeps catching Ciri running her hands through her new haircut, studying her reflection, ice-rimed windows, with a pleased-looking smile. Which, she supposes, is really the important thing. They set out from Ardkerrig at dawn. Ciri perched in the saddle in front of Yennefer, Yaskir strolling along at Geralt's side.
He chatters a surprising amount, given that he is the only one of them on foot, and Yennefer finds herself spending most of the morning staring at him in silent admiration.
Because he has been extemporizing on the subject of archaic Caedwinian ballads for the last hour and a half, with very little by way of hesitation, repetition, or deviation from the topic at hand. It's so dull, it's almost interesting. What's most interesting, of course, is how Geralt just listens, and occasionally responds with more than his standard grunt or hum. With actual words that are relevant?
Yennefer is not sure if she's impressed or horrified.
It's cold enough for the next few days that they don't stop much. They move as quickly as they can between towns and villages, way stations and borrowed barns, always making sure they have a roof over their heads for the night, because Geralt's a witcher, sure, and Yennefer's more than capable of keeping herself warm with the fire of her own chaos. But Ciri and Yaskir are eminently, achingly human. Yennefer feels Ciri press back against her through the cold afternoons and the colder evenings, swathes her in her cloak as much as she can,
and she watches as Yaskir flexes his numbing fingers, his cheeks pinking, his lips turning the faintest shade of blue. The only shelter they can find that night is a rickety old barn in the middle of the countryside, icicles hanging from the eaves and snow piled higher on the exits. And Yennefer wraps herself around Ciri, mumbles words under her breath that will keep them both warm, but that will leave her drained in the morning. She wishes she could extend them to Yaskir, too, but it would leave her far too weak. And she looks up to tell him, to see the pain in his eyes, the chatter in his teeth. Yaskir's eyes are closed, his forehead furrowed, his lips pressed into a thin white line. He's swathed in two cloaks and a blanket, and Geralt is bodily wrapped around him, his chest pressed to Yaskir's back, holding him tight, their legs intertwined. Geralt's nose is buried in the crook of Yaskir's neck, and he's murmuring something that Yennefer can't hear, his breath steaming in the cold air. Yaskir smiles, a tiny, shockingly warm expression, his eyes still closed, and Yennefer watches him relax into Geralt's arms, his breath misting clouds in the icy air. Geralt looks up after a moment, sees Ciri safe and warm in Yennefer's embrace. The worried creases around his eyes soften just a little, and he nods to her, settles back to his single-minded task of keeping Yaskir warm. And Yennefer's gaze darts between them, both of them, wrapped so close and so tight that it's hard to tell in this dim light where one ends and the other begins. The further south they get, though, the warmer the weather turns, and before long the never-ending carpet of snow gives way to lush green grass, to tracks lined with daffodils and crocuses, snowdrops and bluebells. They stop for long breaks in the afternoon, and Yennefer teaches Ciri how to tap into the magic of growing things, how to channel the energy of the blossoming world. Well, Yaskir braids flowers into Roach's mane and composes biting little couplets about Geralt's grumpy, begrudging facial expressions. And it's not courts and world politics. It isn't the patterns of the continent or the making of its future. But it's a good life in its own way. Yennefer guides Ciri through the transmutation of the elements. Earth into fire, into water, into air. Watching as they dance above her hands in the brightness of the springtime sunlight. And firmly reminds herself that this is a good life. Most of the inns they stay at are small, out-of-the-way affairs. Barely able to scrape together a room with two bedbug-free beds, let alone anything more luxurious. Or, for that matter, private. Yennefer's already experienced Yaskir's snores and Geralt's sleep grunts, of course. And individually, they were never really an issue. But their cacophonous symphony, combined with Ciri's twitches and more than occasional night terrors, is a lot. She finds herself blinking herself awake on the back of her horse from time to time, swaying a little in the saddle. And once, she genuinely falls asleep, only to be woken by the gentle touch of Geralt's hand on her shoulder. "Yen?" he asks, his voice soft. Something thrills through Yennefer at his touch, something excited, almost nervous, and she starts, pulls away before she really realizes what she's doing. "Sorry," she says, a little rough. "I must have drifted off." Geralt's forehead furrows, and his hand brushes down her arm, touches her fingers. Her skin practically burns where he touches her. "You sure?" She manages a smile. "I'm sure." Geralt hums and lets her go. She feels oddly bereft at the loss, and she itches to reach out to him, to pull him back. But she doesn't, though, because what is she? Needy? Wanting? She's fucked him across the damn continent. She doesn't need to be nervous. Yaskir wanders up on the other side of her horse, idly plucking his lute. "A bit dozy there, Yennefer?"
Yennefer looks down at him, eyebrow arched.
I just didn't sleep well last night. She pauses, smirks.
Your snoring might be at times, frankly, more melodic than your singing, but it isn't what I want to hear in the middle of the night.
Yaskir presses his hand to his heart, mouth gaping wide in mock horror.
Yennefer! He exclaims, and Geralt laughs softly. And here I was, thinking that you had a smidgen of musicality in you. I am appalled.
Snore less, and I wouldn't need to appall you, Yennefer answers, serene as the springtime landscape around them, and spurs her horse on ahead. The weeks roll by in an easy, sedate pattern. They travel during the day. Yennefer trains Ciri in the afternoons, and from time to time in the evenings, Geralt disappears off on a contract, or Yaskir entertains the patrons of the local taverns. Yennefer finds herself getting used to spending days in the saddle and evenings in the smoky, filthy common rooms of inns, to the lack of privacy and the lack of cleanliness, to the noises her companions make when they sleep, and the smells they produce when they've eaten too much of the wrong thing. Honestly, Ciri's the worst culprit on that particular front. Maybe it's something to do with the digestive system that was brought up on the fare they once served in the Centrum Crown Court, but the quantity and volume of her emissions are honestly staggering at times. When she mentions it to Yaskir after a glass or so of not completely dreadful ale in a tavern one night, after Ciri's gone to bed, of course, he just starts singing some filthy ditty about the perils of sex after large amounts of beans that makes her seriously consider magically sewing his lips together. Geralt, of course, finds the whole thing terribly amusing, which doesn't help.
Yennefer sits at Ciri's side that night and watches her sleep. She runs her fingers through her short, shorn hair, already growing down to her collar with the vibrancy of spring, and listens to the rhythm of her mind, the echo of her thoughts. The mental barriers that Yennefer has been teaching her are firmly established now, keeping the unruliness of her thoughts and her chaos at bay, and their work from here on in will be practicing how to lower those barriers when Ciri needs to, how to dip in and out of that well of power she has drawn without cracking apart under the pressure. Ciri is already demonstrating an aptitude for it, as good with her magical gifts as she is with those tourmaline-hilted daggers that she never puts down. It's simple work for a sorceress of Yennefer's skills. It's very simple work. Ciri's forehead furrows as she sleeps, distress creeping into the surface of her sleeping thoughts. Yennefer runs her hand through her ash-blonde hair, whispers meaningless platitudes into the quiet of the night, and calms her as much as she can. They're nearly at the border with Redania when the April storms hit, and hit hard. After two full days trudging onward through relentless, hammering rain, thunder rumbling in the distance and lightning shrieking overhead. At midday on the third day, Yennefer puts her foot down, points out to Geralt that his child surprise and his bard are both utterly personifying the phrase drowned rat, and then leads them to a nearby inn. In what Yennefer can only assume is the gods deciding to smile upon her for the first time in her long life, the inn is fancy. A boutique establishment with a sneering young clerk on the front desk and expensive, tasteful furnishings in the warmly lit interior. Geralt looks distinctly out of place standing in a corner of the foyer, dripping from his hair, his armor, and his swords. But Yaskir just starts pulling off his boots and pouring the collected rainwater out into one of the inn's many ornamental plant pots. Ciri sprawls out next to him in a chair that's upholstered in expensive red leather, already looking like she owns the place. Yennefer barely graces the clerk on the desk with a glance. Two rooms, she says, running a hand through her wet hair, squeezing the excess out to pool on the marble floors. With bathing facilities, if you have them.
The clerk's gaze flickers to Geralt's.
"I'm afraid," he says, icily polite, "you'll have to look elsewhere. We're currently full."
Yennefer raises an eyebrow.
"In storm season, in this part of Caedwin?" she asks.
"I don't think you are."
"I can assure you, we have no rooms that would be suitable for your party,"
the clerk answers, his hands folded prissily and primly on his gilt-edged desk.
"Oh, Yennefer is not about to let this slide."
"And what exactly do you mean by that?" she asks. And if he wants to be icy, she'll show him icy. Her voice is blizzard cold.
"Ian, it's all right,"
Geralt says softly.
"I really don't think it is,"
Yennefer answers, not looking at him, holding the clerk's gaze.
"Are you telling me that you are turning us away because one of my companions is a witcher?"
To his credit, the clerk doesn't flinch.
"We don't accept his sort here," he says. "There are a few taverns more appropriate for his stature a few miles down the road. I can provide you with directions if you'd like."
"What I would like," Yennefer drawls, "is two rooms, both with bathing facilities, and for this insult, we'll have complimentary meals provided for the duration of our stay."
"I really don't think that's possible," the clerk says, snidely apologetic.
Yennefer can't help it. A smile flickers across her lips, bitter and biting.
"This inn is owned by Noah Cassander, yes?"
"It's one of several he has in the area."
The clerk blinks.
"He is our esteemed patron, that's correct."
Yennefer hums, nods to herself.
"I know Mr. Cassander," she says. "I helped him out a few years ago. A little issue with his wife, if you understand what I mean. A rather personal issue, which he took great pains to keep secret. The kind of thing that business rivals wouldn't appreciate. Or political rivals, for that matter, given that I understand he's started to dip his toe into the mayoral elections in Bangleen."
A flicker of unease shows in the clerk's face. Yennefer doesn't give him an opportunity to speak.
"As a self-made man, he doesn't have the same kind of support network that other candidates do, or the same level of respect. So I somehow don't think that he would take kindly to any adverse rumors about his performance in the bedroom. And I really don't think he'd take kindly to the fact that one of his own employees could have single-handedly prevented the spread of those rumors by the simple expedient of not acting like a complete and utter fucking idiot."
The clerk bristles.
"Ma'am,"
he starts, pitchy and threatened, "I don't know who you think you are, but..."
"I am Yennefer of Vangaberg,"
Yennefer drawls, and feels a deep, visceral thrill of satisfaction when the clerk's eyes almost pop out of his skull.
"I imagine you've heard of me."
The clerk abruptly bows so low that he almost presses his forehead into the desk.
"Of course, my lady,"
he says, fumbling for the keys. Yennefer looks back at Geralt with a sharply victorious smile. He's watching her, still damp, still bedraggled, still very much looking like he's just spent 2 days tramping around in a rainstorm. But there's a light in his eyes now, a heat that burns all the chill of the storm away. Yennefer feels her heart thud harder in her chest, feels an answering heat start to coil in her belly, slick and insistent. Yaskir steps between them and plucks one of the keys out of the clerk's unresisting hands. He shoots Yennefer a knowing glance and says, Me and Siri will give you two some privacy, shall we?
Yennefer is too caught by the light in Geralt's eyes to protest. They're barely through the door of their room before he's on her, touch burning hot, silent gratitude on his lips. The rooms are, as it turns out, rather nice. Not that Yennefer gets much of a chance to look around until much later in the afternoon. While Geralt dresses, she pads around in nothing but a spare shirt she stole from his bag, inspecting the paintings hung on the polished mahogany walls, running her fingers over the rich plushness of the soft furnishings. She opens a door that leads out to a small balcony covered with a slate-tiled roof, to a table with a mosaic inlay and curlicued metal chairs, and for a second, she just listens to the patter of the rain and the clatter of the thunder. Boots sound on the marble floor behind her, and she turns. Geralt is fully dressed, armored up and sword strapped to his back. Yennefer is abruptly very aware that the hem of his stolen shirt barely reaches mid-thigh, that the neck gapes and slips off one shoulder, that she very much looks like she's just spent the afternoon being fucked into the mattress and through the wall, and in all kinds of other extravagant ways, while he looks like he's off to fight in a bloody war. Yennefer cocks an eyebrow, very deliberately does not cover herself. "Leaving so soon?" she asks, and swallows down the pang of hurt that she can't quite forget. "I thought we'd move beyond that stage in our relationship, Geralt." Geralt hums, covers the space to her in a few silent strides, pulls her to him, and kisses her, warm and searching. "A contract," he murmurs against her lips. "In the last village. I saw it when we rode through this morning." Yennefer pulls back. "A contract?" she asks, a little disbelieving. "Drowners," Geralt says, nodding, then glances out at the rain. "Appropriately. Shouldn't be difficult, so I'm going to take Ciri with me. She needs experience with actual contracts. There's only so long she can train against dummies and bags of straw."
"Geralt, she'll be safe,"
Geralt says, and kisses her again.
"I swear."
Yennefer can see in the set of his expression that there's no point in arguing with him. Not about this. She grits her teeth, breathes out through her nose.
"Drowners," she repeats.
"Drowners," Geralt confirms. Then his lips quirk in a wry smile.
"I'm pretty sure it's drowners."
Yennefer rolls her eyes. "Just go," she says, pulling away, turning back to the balcony. "If you get her killed, I'll kill you." Geralt hums.
"Enjoy the room,"
he says, pressing a kiss to the exposed span of her shoulder.
"The bath looks nice. Fancy."
"It should be, given how much we're paying," Yennefer answers, eyebrow arched. Geralt's hand tightens momentarily on her hip, a gentle farewell, and with a rustle of leather and a creak of his boots, he goes. Yennefer stands there a moment longer, an odd sort of haze blurring in her mind, then steps out onto the balcony, sits on one of the ornate metal chairs, and discovers that, actually, it's oddly comfortable. She thinks about the room inside, about the soft sheets and the luxurious bathtub, the rich furs and the fire burning in the marble hearth, but doesn't go in. She stays out on the balcony, sheltered by the jut of the slate-tiled roof from the worst of the storm, and listens as it crashes around the walls of the inn. A knock sounds at the door, and she absently answers.
"Come in."
"Yennefer?" she hears Asker call.
"You in here?"
"Out in the balcony."
"You have a balcony?"
Yaskir appears in the doorway, stripped down to his shirt sleeves, bottle of white wine in one hand and two glasses in the other.
"We don't have a balcony,"
he enthuses. Then actually looks at her, blinks, and looks quickly away.
"Do you want to put some more clothes on?"
Yennefer reaches out, takes the wine bottle from him. "You've seen me in worse states of undress," she says.
"Corkscrew?"
Yaskier produces one from his pocket, hands it over, and sits down.
"Got this from that lovely gentleman downstairs,"
he says, settling the glasses on the table. He smiles, a little wry.
"Funnily enough, he's gotten a lot more polite since you had your little chat with him."
Yennefer bares her teeth in a smile and pulls the cork out of the bottle with a sharp pop.
"How unexpected."
Yaskier laughs, takes the bottle from her, and pours from them both.
"I have to say, I like when you're biting strangers' heads off in defense of our Witcher,"
he says. And his voice is light and breezy, as it always is, yes. But Yennefer can't quite shake the feeling that there's something he's not saying. She picks up her glass, sips, and puts it to one side.
"Not that I don't like you normally, of course,"
Yaskier hastens to reassure her. "But you really do have a certain something extra when you're all intimidating." Yennefer raises an eyebrow.
"Are you telling me you're attracted to strong women, Yaskier?"
"I'm attracted to strong people in general," Yaskier corrects. "I would have thought that was obvious, given the whole Geralt situation."
"True,"
Yennefer allows, and sips her wine. Then pauses, studies the pale liquid in her glass.
"This is good, isn't it?"
"I never thought much of Caedwinian wine before," Yaskier answers. "But yeah, it is. From a local vineyard, apparently. I'm going to have to make a note of the name."
"Not sure how widely stocked Caedwinian wine is across the continent,"
Yennefer observes.
Yaskier shrugs. "That'll just make it all the more exciting when we do come across it."
The inn's forecourt is spread out below them, the flagstones glimmering in the pouring rain. And Yennefer watches as the doors to the stables open and Geralt comes trotting out, Ciri sitting behind him on his horse with her arms locked around his waist. The rain's too strong for her to hear what they're saying, but Ciri is clearly vibrating with excitement, leaning around Geralt's back to shout at him through the storm, her bright hair flashing in the lightning strikes until she pulls her hood up over her head. Geralt says something, unheard, and they wheel around and gallop out of the forecourt. At Yennefer's side, Yaskier shakes his head, buries a smile in his glass of wine.
"My father," he says, after a particularly loud rumble of thunder, "bonded with me over hawks, not drowners."
He pauses, takes a long sip, then murmurs mostly to himself. "Not that he was particularly good at it, admittedly." Yennefer thinks about running her fingers through Ciri's hair as she sleeps, about the pride that swells up in her heart every time she watches her grow more into her power. But then she thinks about the itch of unstretched chaos that's growing under her skin every day, about how she's still turning Istrid's dissertation over in her mind weeks after she read it for the first time, about how it felt so fucking good to put that petty little clerk in his place with nothing more than a hint at the kind of political power she can really wield. This is a good life. But it's not her life. Yennefer drinks, rolls the stem of her glass between her fingers. "My father," she says, staring out into the flashing lightning, the rolling thunder, the words pouring out of her before she can stop them. "Ignored me, neglected me, and sold me to Aretuza for a handful of coins." Her lips curl, but it isn't a smile.
"I thought I'd be different,"
Yaskir is quiet for a long second. Then out of the corner of her eye, Yennefer sees him put his glass carefully down on the table.
"What are you talking about, Yennefer?"
he asks, and there's a carefulness in his voice that she hasn't heard in a long time.
Yennefer downs the rest of her glass of wine,
hastily pours another.
"Forget I said anything,"
she says, a sour taste in her throat that's nothing to do with the wine.
"Yeah, I don't think so,"
Yaskir says.
"Yaskir." "Yennefer!"
Yaskir counters, then leans across the table and snatches her wine glass right out of her hand.
"You don't want me to be sensitive and gentle with you? Fine. What the fuck are you talking about?" "Give me back my wine,"
Yennefer snarls.
"It's my wine,"
Yaskir snaps. Then, to prove a point, tosses back her glass.
"I paid for it, and I'm not sharing any more with you until you explain exactly what you mean by that bullshit statement."
Yennefer makes a grab for the wine. But when he wants to, Yaskir can actually be remarkably fast. He steals both glasses and the bottle away, stashes them on the floor out of her reach, then turns to face her, jaw set. It's a familiar expression.
"Let's try this again,"
he says, and the thunder rumbles in an angry counterpoint to his words. "We've just watched our gloriously manly witcher ride away to bond with his surrogate daughter over, of all ridiculous things, drowners. I've just made a brief allusion to my own not-so-wonderful relationship with my father, which you've just echoed, along with a really horrific and frankly far too quickly brushed aside mention of being sold into a life of magic and pillow fights, which, you know, we're going to come back to later. Because I swear that you just consciously implied that you're, what, as shitty a parent as a man who sold you?"
Yennefer grits her teeth.
"You don't understand," she says, tight and bitter.
"You couldn't understand."
Yaskir's expression doesn't soften.
"Then tell me," he says, less a friendly entreaty than an order,
and flashes her a bright smile.
"I'll give you your wine back when you do."
A laugh wrenches itself from Yennefer's lips. "You know, I can just take the damn wine," she says, and all of a sudden her shoulders slump. A tension that she'd barely noticed was building in her limbs, all but gone.
"You can't stop me if I really try, Bard."
Yaskir eyes her for a second, then seems to like what he sees.
"I figured,"
he says, then retrieves the glasses and the bottle.
"Go on, then,"
he says, gesturing at her expansively, his eyes keen in the dimness of the storm.
"Explain it to me."
There's steel in his voice, insistent and strict. And Yennefer knows that if it were anyone else, she'd rankle against that. If it were Triss, or Tisea, or fuck, if it were Geralt, she'd rankle against it because she doesn't need anyone to tell her what to do. That's the last thing she wants. She doesn't need their judgment, doesn't need their orders, doesn't need them to think that they know better than her. But Yaskir's sitting there, glass in his hand, and he's waiting for an answer. If there's one thing Yennefer has learned about Yaskir over the years that they've spent drinking together in assorted taverns, bars, and wheat fields across the continent, it's that he is the last person in this world who'd judge her. Mainly because she knows far too much about his own failings and foibles, admittedly, and is more than happy to blackmail him with that knowledge, but that's neither here nor there. Yennefer drinks, feels the weight of his gaze lingering on her like heavy velvet drapes.
"It's been barely a few weeks that I've been with you,"
she says, her glass chilled beneath her fingertips, cooling even further in the crash of the storm.
"And I'm already desperate to leave."
And by you,
Yaskir says,
head tilted to one side. You mean Ciri?
I mean all three of you, Yennefer corrects sharply, then deflates, drinks again.
Her glass is already half empty, and if she keeps drinking at this rate, they're going to need at least another bottle.
You and Geralt and Ciri. Especially Ciri.
She breathes out sharply. Drinks.
Ciri is magnificent,
she says eventually, her tongue thick in her mouth like she's drunk already.
She is skilled, and she is clever, and she is eager to learn. She takes to chaos better than anyone I've seen in a long time. And that's alongside learning witchering from Geralt and whatever it is you teach her when you share a room with her.
Yaskir snorts, whirlpools the wine in his glass.
A bit of music, a bit of other things, he says wryly. Lots of clever ways to insult people, and more than a few snippets of bad language that I only picked up when I went to Oxenford. You know, the important things that a witcher sorceress really needs to know.
He laughs again.
And this is why you and Geralt are her parents, and I'm just the fun uncle.
Yennefer winces. Want to swap?
Not for all the lavender mead in Lyria,
Yaskir says.
And I'm pretty sure that in reality, your answer is the same as mine.
He leans forward, his elbows on the table, glass held between the elegant bracket of his fingers.
Come on, Yennefer, he says. Talk to me.
Yennefer spreads the fingers of one hand wide, studies the furrows of her knuckles, the veins in the back of her hand.
I spent so long, she says, not looking at him, not meeting his gaze, because if she does, she knows she won't be able to keep going.
Wanting to be a mother. Wanting a chance to take back what they took from me when I graduated from Aretusa.
She ladles the word full of condescension, dripping with scorn.
That's why I followed that asshole Sir Ike on that disaster of a dragon hunt.
Yaskir shudders melodramatically.
May he rest in shitless peace.
That's why I did so many things, Yennefer says, ignoring him. That's why I did most of the things I've spent my life doing. Because if I could take back that choice, if I could reverse the decision that they made me make, then maybe I could feel it.
When she doesn't elaborate, Yaskir pushes.
Feel what? And that's the question, isn't it? The question that stabs right to the heart of every front and every facade that Yennefer's ever built for herself. And she's hidden behind those walls for so long, kept herself separate, kept herself apart. Then all it takes is that one simple question for the whole fucking edifice to come tumbling down. Anything, Yennefer answers, her voice cracking at the sheer absurdity of that answer, the fucking melodrama of it. And oh, Yaskir might not have mocked her thus far, might have feared her, maybe even respected her, but that's surely over now. Anything. What kind of fucking overdramatic shit?
Go on, Yaskir says. And his voice is gentle and calm, yes, but there's that same steel just below the surface.
Yennefer looks out at the storm, at the sheeting rain, the burning lightning.
There is something missing, she says after a moment, feeling the rumble of the thunder in her aching bones. In my life. In my heart.
Fuck!
She snarls, drinks heavily.
The wine is going to her head faster than it really should do, but she hasn't exactly eaten much today. Too preoccupied with the rain, and then the arrogant idiot downstairs, and then the strength of Geralt's arms to give much thought to food. It feels like there's a hole in my chest, she says, watching the dark bruises of the storm clouds, the jagged slashes of the lightning. A darkness. I've been trying to fill it all my life, with magic, with politics, with power. Bitterness surges in her throat. With motherhood.
With Ciri?
Yaskir asks, his voice quiet. Yennefer sits up straight, smacks her wine glass down so hard on the mosaic tabletop that she's honestly surprised it doesn't shatter. You cannot repeat this to Geralt, she says, her heart all of a sudden caught in her throat. Any of it. He wouldn't understand. Not about this. Yaskir holds up his hands, clearly startled by the vehemence in her voice. I won't, he says, eyes wide. Of course I won't, Yennefer. You know I won't. He's silent for a moment as she pours wine into her glass again, splashing it over the rim and onto the tabletop. There's plenty of things you told me that I haven't told him, Yaskir says, then snorts a laugh. Plenty of things we've done, too, my naiad. Yennefer rolls her eyes. Don't call me that, she says, but lighter. As affectionate as she can manage right now, with adrenaline and pain flooding her veins. She sits back, sets her glass against her bare thighs, cherishes the sharp chill. With Ciri, she says eventually, quieter, a little sadder. Geralt told me about her on the mountain. At least that he had a child surprise. And at that moment, I knew that whoever this child was, I could help them. I could care for them. I could be a mother to them. She grits her teeth, closes her eyes. I knew it, she says. I knew it more than I've known anything in a very long time. And I knew that this was it, that this was what would make me fuck whole. Yaskir's watching her. Intense. Intent. He doesn't speak. I love her, Yennefer says, because it feels like it needs to be said. I would die for her, Yaskir. I would lay down my life for her without even thinking about it. Yaskir tilts his head to one side. I'm sensing a but. But I'm bored, Yennefer blurts. And fuck, she's horrified with herself the second she says it. She plows on, feeling self-hatred boiling up in her heart with every venomous word she spills. Living like this, wandering through the middle of nowhere, eating burned rabbit and foraged berries, and the smells. Gods, Yaskir, I can't spend my life like this. There's so much more. The continent is so much bigger. Her heart is racing. She can't bring herself to meet Yaskir's gaze. I'm supposed to be devoted to her, she says. But I'm not. I need more than this. I can't spend the rest of my life teaching Ciri paltry magic and following Geralt around on monster hunts. I can't. She stops. Her breathing is heavy. Do you know why we're traveling to Redania? Yaskir asks. No judgment in his voice. No scorn. No disdain. There are tears in Yennefer's eyes. Sharp and biting. She brushes them away. Oxenfurt, she says shortly. You're teaching there for summer term. Yaskir nods. My biennial How to Tame a Witcher course, he says. And when she looks up at him, he's smiling. The official title is Poetic Hyperbole in Historiography, of course. But most of the students only take it because they want to hear about how I managed to bag the mighty Geralt of Rivia as both my muse and my lover. He shrugs. They're always surprised by how rigorous my marking is. They think it's going to be easy, but it actually has the lowest proportion of first-class results of any course of the academy.
Yennefer stares at him.
Yaskir, what? The Oxenford term is only a couple of months.
Yaskir interrupts.
But then there are the midsummer festivals. I'm thinking Novigrad this year. Or maybe Sidoras, because it's been a while since I put Valdo in his place. And then there's wedding season, so I'll be booked up for a good month or so after that. Usually at least until early autumn.
Yennefer sees where Yaskir is going with this. That's not the point, she says.
I won't see Geralt and Ciri for 4, maybe 5 months, Yaskir says. At least not for protracted periods of time. Maybe a day here and there. Sometimes Geralt comes to the festivals. Although I don't know why, because he definitely doesn't appreciate the music. That's not the point, Yennefer snaps. You go because you want to be there, not because you don't want to be here.
It's both, actually, Yaskir says blithely.
I love Geralt, and I love Ciri. But gods, Geralt is fucking annoying sometimes. And Ciri is brilliant, so smart, so bright, and she's been through so much, but she's still just a child. Sometimes I need adult company that has broader interests than swords, potions, and suppressing his emotions.
He smiles at her, a little rueful.
It's why I've enjoyed having you with us so much, he says,
then tilts his glass to her.
That and your impeccable taste in accommodation.
Yennefer's mouth is dry. She drinks to ease the way.
It's not the same, she says, shaking her head.
Why not? Yaskir asks.
Aside from the fact that I'm a lowly human bard, of course. Because this is supposed to be who I am, Yennefer snaps. Ciri is supposed to be everything to me. She is supposed to complete me. And I can't even be what she needs me to be. I can't even be her mother.
Her jaw snaps shut. She breathes tight through her nose.
Not like I should be,
she says finally, her voice bitter.
Not like Geralt is. Devoted. All-encompassing. Committed.
You came all the way to Ard Kerrig for her,
Yaskir says quietly. You slept in the dirt and traveled in the rain for her.
Yaskir,
you love her, Yennefer,
Yaskir says, and his smile is crooked now, tinged with pain.
You love her like your father didn't love you.
He pauses, just for a moment.
Like mine didn't love me,
he says.
So raw it burns Yennefer's heart. And I'm no expert in parenting, but I think that that's the important thing. So what if you can't be with her all the time?
You're with her when she needs you to be.
Yennefer's heart is twisted and cold in her chest.
But Geralt...
Geralt is a very simple man,
Yaskir interrupts. And Yennefer usually hates being interrupted, but right now, every time he speaks over her, it's like the storm in her chest calms a little more.
Once you get through all the grunting and repression, that is. He wants to be loved, and he wants to shower the people he cares about with love. That's it.
He laughs.
Oh, and maybe hot monsters every now and then. But he's not like us, Yennefer. He doesn't need the adoration of an audience like I do. He doesn't need to mold the future of the continent like you do.
Yennefer raises an eyebrow.
That's not what I need. Yaskir smirks. We both know it is,
he says. Then drinks from his glass, studying her.
There is something else I want to say,
he says, a little hesitant.
But I'm only going to say it if you promise not to rip my spine out through my mouth.
Very graphic,
Yennefer says dryly. This many years with Geralt have given me a keen sense of self-preservation.
Yennefer laughs.
I know for a fact that isn't true, she says. But in the interest of Geralt's happiness, I promise I won't murder you graphically and violently as a consequence of whatever you want to say to me.
She pauses, sips her wine.
I can make no promises for my actions after that.
Yasgir sighs.
I did say I like strong women, he says, half to himself. Not sure at what point in my life my type became people who can kill me without lifting a finger, but here we are.
A strange expression flickers over his face. Strangely nervous, almost shocked, but it disappears almost as quickly as it came. Anyway, he says, a little flustered.
Yes, so, advice. This hole of yours.
Yennefer raises an eyebrow.
I thought you were supposed to be good with words.
Yasgir looks vaguely pained.
Okay, so that wasn't my best opening line, he says, then straightens, sighs.
Yennefer, what I'm trying to say is that this absence you feel, the one that you say you've been trying to fill all this time, Yennefer snorts.
Say nothing!
This void. He pauses, sighs again. His eyes are bright in the light spilling out from inside, and the storm rumbles quietly in the silence. The only person who could make you feel whole is you, Yennefer, Yasgir says. Being a mother to Ciri, being a lover to Geralt, that's not going to complete you. Neither, I imagine, will becoming a magical sorceress ruler of the continent, although I don't have quite so much experience with that, so I can't be completely sure. Yennefer's heart is ripped open and raw.
Then what will?
Fuck if I know, Yasgir answers, smiling a lopsided smile. I'm a bard in his not-so-early 40s who's still wandering around with a witcher who has more difficulty expressing himself emotionally than my fucking father does.
When I'm at Kaer Morhen, I miss Oxenfurt so much. The students, the other professors, the gorgeous architecture, and the people who challenge me, who make my music better. But then, when I'm in Oxenfurt, teaching and composing and performing, the only place I want to be is Kaer Morhen, with the grumpy witchers and their crumbling, hauntingly beautiful mountain home.
He shrugs.
Not knowing what you want doesn't make you a monster, Yennefer, he says. It makes you human.
I'm not human, Yennefer says sharply.
In this, you are, Yasgir answers. You're no different from the rest of us. Messy and complicated and just trying to figure it out as you go along.
He studies her for a moment.
You don't have to try to be perfect, he says, quiet enough that it's almost lost beneath the pattering of the rain. You're good enough as you are. There's something swelling in Yennefer's chest, something warm and rich and intoxicating, spiraling out through her limbs, sparking in her fingertips and heating in her palms.
That's good to know, she says, sliding sideways into humor because that's easier than listening to whatever's growing in her heart. Given that I'm already perfect. She drinks, long and slow, feeling the burn of the alcohol down her throat.
No improvements needed.
Yasgir's lips quirk in a small, warm smile.
None at all, he says, something heavy in his gaze, just as warm as whatever's coiling in Yennefer's chest.
Are you going to stop being ridiculous now?
That depends, Yennefer says, leaning forward to top up her glass.
On what? Yasgir asks, looking suspicious.
On whether you're going to tell me where I can find your father, Yennefer says lightly,
watching surprise blossom across Yaskir's face. So I can give him exactly what he deserves for how appallingly he's treated his son.
There's no need for that,
Yaskir says. And he's smiling, yes, but it isn't exactly happy.
It was just a dash of your standard noble childhood neglect, you know?
His expression tightens.
Sweetened with a sprinkling of emotional abuse and the occasional night spent, well, locked in the cellars when I'd done something particularly unbecoming of the family name.
He shrugs, drinks his wine.
He never laid a hand on me, if that's what you're worrying about.
His gaze is heavy.
And he never tried to sell me.
My father's dead, Yennefer says, ignoring the old knife that twists in her heart. Beyond my control. Yours, on the other hand, is very much still alive, and therefore still capable of suffering.
Yes, but where's the fun in that? Yaskir sighs.
I'd much rather wait until he's old and ridden with disease. Gout, syphilis, that kind of thing. Then I can go back to Leighton, prance in through the doors with the youthful looks that I definitely got from my mother's side, and shove my happiness in the old goat's face.
Yennefer nods thoughtfully, tapping her fingertip against her lips.
So, she says, Leighton.
Yennefer, Yaskir says, amusement tugging at his lips. I should not have to say this to you, but here goes anyway. Do not murder my ass of a father.
Yennefer sighs dramatically.
You spoil all my fun, she says, then looks significantly at the now empty wine bottle that's sitting on the table between them.
Also, we're going to need some more wine.
Yaskir laughs. Talking about your feelings is extremely thirsty work, he says, then tosses back the last of his glass and gets to his feet.
You stay here. I'll be right back.
Be quick,
Yennefer instructs, watches him disappear out the door, then turns back to the storm. The rain hasn't let up, still lashing down in vertical stripes, sluicing off the roof of the balcony like a waterfall. And she stares out at the storm clouds, bruised purple, deep blue, swirling gray, staining the early evening sky. It's roiling and unquiet, but at the same time, she's finding it oddly soothing. She drinks slowly, savoring the taste, feeling the familiar warmth of inebriation seeping through her limbs. She's a little cold, if she's honest, the cool air pricking goosebumps in the bare skin of her legs. But the wine wraps its jacket around her, cozying her, comforting her. And she's enjoying the luxury of wearing nothing but Geralt's shirt too much to give it up. It's decadent, sitting on a balcony in a storm like this, half naked, wine drunk. It's decadent, and it's lavish, and the only thing that's missing is a second bottle of delicious Caedwinian wine, Yaskir says, putting two bottles on the table. And as a treat, my even more delicious lavender mead.
Yaskir. Yennefer groans.
You know I hate that mead, she says. It's so fucking sickly.
Yeah, but I know what you're like when you're a bottle deep, Yaskir points out.
You'll drink anything at that point, except that stout in the White Hart in Oxenfurt,
Yennefer completes, because it is even more disgusting than the mead.
Yaskir shrugs.
I quite like it, he says, uncorking the new bottle of wine.
Tab up?
Please.
Yaskir pours from them both, then picks up his glass, holds it out.
To absent fathers, he says, with a bitter twist to his smile. May they remain absent, and quickly contract the worst case of gout the continent has ever seen.
Yennefer touches her glass to his with a soft clink.
And to filling a hole, she says, and drinks. Yasgir snorts.
I'll drink to that,
he says, a lascivious lick in his voice. And the thunder rumbles loud in the sky around them. They drink, and they talk, and they laugh with an abandon that lights Yennefer's heart on fire. They get through the second bottle of wine and half the mead before Yennefer decides that, actually, the mead is just as bad as the White Hart Stout, and sends Yasgir back downstairs for more wine. He comes back with two bottles and a plate of cold cuts, but by that time the wind has picked up, driving the rain under the balcony's roof, and they retreat inside, Yennefer staggering and having to catch herself against Yasgir's shoulder so she doesn't fall. He laughs, catches her with an arm around her waist, then deposits her on the messy bed, puts the plate next to her, and hands her the bottle. Yennefer, he says, very serious, and somehow ecstatically laughing at the same time. I have a request. Yennefer eats a slice of ham, takes a mouthful of wine from the bottle. What do you want, Yasgir?
I want to braid your hair,
Yasgir says immediately.
I'll be honest, I've been thinking about it for years. It's just so thick, and Geralt never lets me braid his, because this one time I braided flowers into the back without telling him, and then he tried to be all manly and aggressive when I started a bar fight, and, well, this guy only stopped punching me in the gut because he started laughing at the idea of a witcher with flowers in his hair.
Yes, Yennefer says, eating a slice of roast beef.
You can braid my hair.
Yasgir makes an excited noise, then practically leaps on the bed. He settles himself behind her, his legs stretched out to either side. Then his nimble hands start combing through her hair, working at the knots tangled by the storm's wind. It feels good, his fingertips rubbing at her scalp, gently tugging her hair into complex patterns. His touch glancing against the skin of her neck, her shoulders, and she nestles backwards into his embrace, seeking that contact, that comfort. She drinks from the bottle, then holds a chunk of roast chicken over her shoulder, feels Yasgir lean forward and take it from her hand with his teeth. His breath is warm and damp against her fingers. A shudder shivers through Yennefer's body, and she tugs a fold of the blanket over her bare legs to stave off the cold. I fucking love your hair, Yasgir murmurs, one of his hands coming to rest gently against the expanse of her shoulder that's bared by Geralt's oversized shirt. Yennefer is drunk, and the sheets around them still smell like sex and Geralt. That's the only explanation for the unexpected curl of heat that's spreading through her belly. Yennefer, Yasgir says, a strange note in his voice, his thumb brushing carefully against the nape of her neck. The door opens with a clatter, and Geralt comes tramping in, dripping water and something that Yennefer is going to assume is drowner blood. Ciri's at his side, looking just as bedraggled as he does, but there's a beaming smile on her face that jolts straight to Yennefer's heart. I killed a drowner, she crows, bouncing up and down, boots squelching with every step. It was gross. There's an affectionate smile on Geralt's lips, and he squeezes her shoulder.
You did well, he says. Now that we've found them, why don't you go back to your room, get cleaned up? I'll come show you the best way to get the blood out of your clothes.
Ciri plucks at her damp clothes, then smiles up at him, sunny and bright. Vesemir is going to be so impressed, she says, with the confidence of the young, and disappears away down the corridor. Good to see you didn't get her killed, Yennefer says, and Yasgir's hands have slipped away from her shoulders, so she gets to her feet, the blanket sliding off her legs, her feet flat against the cold marble floor. She stalks towards Geralt, still feeling that strange heat in her belly, the alcohol weaving through her like comets in the night sky, and leans up to kiss him, long and lingering. I'd say we missed you, she says, bottle of wine still dangling from her hand. But I'm afraid we didn't.
Yasgir laughs, bright and musical. And Yennefer realizes that he's alongside her, his cheeks flushed, his hair mussed. He presses a single fingertip to Geralt's chin, turns his head, then kisses him in turn, deeper, longer. Yennefer sees a flicker of tongue, and when Yasgir breaks away, his lips are slick and red. And, Yasgir says, grinning happily, although we're glad you're back, we're going to need you to go away now. Geralt's expression is somewhere between amused and confused.
You are?
We are, Yennefer agrees, then flashes the bottle at him. We've got the rest of this to finish.
And I'm not done with her hair, Yasgir adds.
And there's food.
Oh, yeah, the chicken is good.
In short, Yennefer says, easy and light, feeling the alcohol in her blood and the happiness in her heart. Go away and leave us to our wine.
Geralt looks between them, a frown creasing his forehead. I guess I'll stay with Ciri tonight, he says slowly. If that's what you want.
Perfect,
Yasgir says brightly, then snatches the bottle of wine from Yennefer's hand and takes a drink. Come on, witch. The plats are coming out, so I'm going to need to start again. Honestly, Geralt, it's like you don't even care about Yennefer's hair.
Shocking, Yennefer deadpans, and takes the bottle back.
I'll just leave you to it, then,
Geralt says, still looking between them like they're insane.
Should probably go have a bath.
Yeah, you do smell a bit, Yasgir says.
He's gone back to the bed already, and he drops down heavily, then pats the space in front of him.
Come on, I've got work to do.
Yennefer plants her fingers in the center of Geralt's chest, gives him a light push, and goes back to Yasgir's side. She sits on the edge of the bed, flicks her half-braided hair back over her shoulder, and suppresses a drunken sigh as Yasgir's fingers get back to work.
Geralt stares at them a moment longer before leaving them to it, and Yennefer closes her eyes, cants her head back, listens to Yasgir's incessant soft chatter, his words just on the edge of slurring, as he works miracles with her thick, dark hair.
They finish the wine and the cold meats, and then by that point, Yennefer is drunk enough that the lavender mead is tolerable once again, so they finish that too. It's dark outside, the storm still crackling around the roof of the inn, and they sprawled out across the sheets, not even really talking anymore. Yasgir humming something under his breath, Yennefer staring up at the canopy of the bed, studying the golden tassels with the sober solemnity of the extremely drunk.
You know, she says, licking her lips, this is a comfy bed.
Yasgir doesn't answer, and he stopped humming, too. Yennefer looks over at him incuriously to discover that he is fast asleep, his mouth open, arm thrown over his eyes, and a sheet pulled lazily up over his other side. She studies him a moment longer, drenched in the rush of his breathing, the rich alcohol smell of his sweat, then looks back up at the tasseled canopy.
Very comfy, she murmurs to herself,
then pulls out the blankets, wraps them around herself, and goes to sleep. In the morning, Yennefer wakes to a dry mouth, a throbbing head, and Yasgir's arm thrown heavily across her waist. She blinks, groans, then elbows him off and says,
I'm going to take a bath.
Yasgir just grumbles something incoherent, rolls over, and goes back to sleep.